olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use four-letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today,
and day's night today, and black's white today,
and most guys today, that woman prize today,
are just silly gigolos.
And though I'm not a great romancer,
I know you're bound to answer
when we propose. Anything goes. Go.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Straight Talk here on The Voice, 830 AM WEEU, and of course online at WEEU.com. It's Nick Lawrence, folks. We do this every week at this time, and you know what I love to do? I love to talk to guests, and we have a great guest tonight to be on the show with us, and our guest has taught in public school classrooms and served as a highly respected, nationally recognized principal for 30 years. She's a sought-after speaker, trainer, and facilitator who specializes in building relationships in diverse communities and putting students at the top of the organizational chart. So she offers firsthand perspectives and an insider viewpoint on the necessary changes that will benefit students, teachers, parents, and school communities. And her passion is to prevent the privatization of public schools and bring back the joy of learning. Well, she's written a brand new book. It's called Principals Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. Our special guest tonight is Susan Colton. Susan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Nick. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited about doing the show with you. One of the things we always start with, I mean, I read a little bit of your bio, but it really doesn't say much about you. So tell us your story. Tell us a little bit where you grew up and how you decided to get into education, all the good stuff.
All the good stuff. Well, let's see. I actually grew up in Western New York State. I was born in Chautauqua County off of Lake Erie in Western New York. And I did most of my my school years in Elmira, New York, which is right on the border of Southern New York State and Northern Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty close to not too far from where you are.
Exactly, yeah.
So when I was 13 years old, I moved with my parents to Florida, and Pompano Beach, Florida, to be exact, which is the greater Fort Lauderdale area, and have lived here ever since. As far as education goes, I always wanted to be a teacher ever since I was 6 years old. I was an only child up until I was 15, and so to amuse myself, I used to line up all my teddy bears and my dolls and play school. So I started pretty early on into wanting to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being an only child, I didn't have too many people to boss around.
Sure.
So I had to use what was available.
And teddy bears were available, apparently, right?
Absolutely.
And they listened to you, too. That's a good thing.
And they didn't talk back.
Right,
so
exactly.
It was the best.
Yeah. So, Susan, were your mom and dad teachers? Mm-hmm. As education, was that a strong value in your family?
Education was a strong value in my family. They weren't teachers. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was in the insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he traveled a little bit around the around that part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then was transferred to Florida, wanting to get to the warm weather and eventually retire in this area. So, you know, I was in junior high at that time, or middle school, as it's called these days, and I moved to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Pompano Beach, Florida, and went to school here. I also was a teacher and a principal in Broward County, which is the greater Fort Lauderdale area. As you said, for 30 years, more than 30 years, I was a principal for 22 years. And I want to tell you, though, what really changed, you know, how I became passionate about public education.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is I was an elementary school teacher, and then I became an assistant principal. And then at that time, of course, I was aspiring to be a principal. But I was told by my best of friends that I would never become a principal because I was too nice.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, you know, am I supposed to toughen up or, you know, have a different outlook on life because I've always been a positive person. So, but one day my day came. I was at a workshop, actually, on a teacher's planning day. And I was at our district's TV studio learning how to make a marketing tape for our school. And I get a call in the middle of the workshop. I get called out, and it was my principal, the person that was my supervisor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that her bosses, two very distinguished ladies, an area director and an area superintendent, had just called her, and they wanted me to meet them for lunch at this little Italian restaurant not too far from the school where we both worked.
So you had no idea. You had no idea what they wanted with you, though.
Well, she said that you know, that I was going to get a principal's assignment.
Wow.
And or at least a temporary one.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, so I was to get in my car and drive 20 miles from, you know, back up to the northern part of the district and you know, get to this Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what was going on, but I did find out. Well, one of the things is I have no idea what I had for lunch that day, that's for sure. But I do remember that they said to me, "You are going to be placed at this school, and we have just removed the principal from this school and cleaned out her office, and we're going to have lunch, and then at 2 o'clock we're going to take you to that school and introduce you to your new staff and your students."
So you were starting, you started that very day.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah, not in the frame of mind to do that.
Of course.
Mind you.
Yeah.
You know, but I did hear about all the challenges. It was a school that was in chaos, and the parents were supposedly meeting in these clandestine meetings in parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers, I was told, were wearing black armbands because they were rebelling against what the principal wanted and what the parents were expecting. And there wasn't much teaching and learning going on at that school at that time.
Yeah.
So here I was, you know, trying to have my lunch and listen to what my expectations were. And the area director, she was very particular, so particular that all of the chairs in every classroom had to match.
Okay.
And she sent me home from lunch, and she said, "We're going to send you home because you have on a pantsuit." It was a teacher's planning day.
Okay.
And I want you to go home and put on a skirt suit so that you can be presented as a proper and appropriate principal.
So how did you take that then? How did you respond to that?
Fine.
Yeah.
I'm on my way. And luckily I, you know, this was all I lived at that time.
Yeah.
Probably about, you know, 5 minutes from that school.
Sure.
So it was convenient.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was brought in and, 2 o'clock, and the other principal had been removed, and I was meeting my new staff. And I just remember, you know, that my heart was beating very fast, and I was, you know, wanting to let them know that I was there for them, and I was there as long as their priority was children.
Mm-hmm.
and as long as our school priority would be getting back to teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. And I would be right there beside them. I would listen to any of the concerns that they had, and we would solve any of the problems and issues together.
So that was a different approach than the previous administrator, previous principal, obviously.
Oh my goodness, yes. There were stories of bulletin boards being torn off the walls and classes being interrupted and
wow.
You know, teachers not feeling valued and
yeah.
that kind of a chaotic culture, you would say,
mm-hmm.
or climate.
So the way you were, your personality, you're in a new situation there. How did the teachers respond to you? I'm assuming, because I read your book, I know the outcome was good, but tell our audience that.
Well, they were, of course, a little tentative.
Sure.
Here's another new person coming in, and the other person had just left. And so what I wanted to do was come across, as myself, a positive, very positive person, very willing to listen and value individual people. And there were three things that I decided right then and told them, you know, that I would do. And one of those things was to listen, and that's listen, listen, listen.
Yeah.
Another was to do what I say and say what I do,
mm-hmm.
that I would follow through on anything that I said that I would do, and that also that I would value each of them, each person, as an individual, and also value their opinions and the values that they had. So this was in March of the school year. So basically I was appointed as an acting principal for the remainder of that year. So I, you know, got to act and you know, figure mm-hmm. out whether I would make the grade and
yeah.
Get the permanent position. And so for the rest of that year, which was about 3 months left in the school year, and actually for the whole following year, that's exactly what I did. I spent, you know, many, many hours talking to individual teachers coming in to the office,
yeah.
individual parents, and just listening. And not just listening, you know, listening to respond to what I thought was the answer to their problem or their issue.
You actually were attentive to listening to, which is what people really need. It sounds like you know, the word they would apply to you today would probably be that you were truly an authentic person at the time, although that may not have been what they were expecting until they got to meet you. Now, Susan, we're going to take our first break. We're coming up here on a break. I want to tell everybody with whom we're speaking. I have a ton of questions for you tonight to ask you about education. Folks, our special guest tonight is Susan Colton, Colton. Name of the book is called Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. And I'm going to send you to her website while you're listening to the show, if you can do that. If not, certainly go there after the show. And it is her name, Susan. Her middle initial is A, so it's Susan A. Colton, Colton.com. You're listening to Straight Talk here on The Voice, 830 AM WEEU, and online, WEEU.com. We will be back with our guest. Tons of things to talk about with her tonight. We'll be right back, so stay with me.
Wonder I can think at all, and my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Cold a throne. Sunny day, oh yeah, I got a knife.
Hey, everybody. Welcome or welcome back to Straight Talk here on The Voice, 830 AM WEEU and online WEEU.com. You know, we do this every week, folks, at this time, and I bring you some of the best guests, I believe, from all over the country and the world. Tonight's no exception. The name of the book is called Principles, Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. Our guest is Susan Colton, and you can go to her website, which is her name, SusanAColton.com. So, Susan, I am back with you, and I want to talk to you. I know one of the things that you talk about in your book is you're saying that testing is taking over teaching, and it's taking the place of teaching. So what do you mean by that, and what's the downside of that happening, if there is a downside to it?
Well, Nick, I do believe there is a downside to that. And what's happened, really over the past two decades, is we've gone from teachers being able to teach creatively, have the students involved in critical thinking skills, debates, conversation in the classroom, to being a test-focused environment. And this all happened back in the 1990s, and it happened with the age of, A Nation at Risk came along first.
Mm-hmm.
That was a publication talking about, our country and relationship to other countries. And then from there, it was decided that schools would be based, the curriculum would be based on a standards-focused curriculum. So each state was responsible for writing their state standards. And, in Florida, we had the Florida state standards, and, each state had their own particular test. And what was happening then at that time is that we were undergoing a change where there were big business companies out there, major companies that were putting in proposals to write tests for the state standards in each test in each state. And so it was an opportunity for big business to become bigger and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, each state relied on this test focus. And for example, in my state in Florida, at the time, Jeb Bush was governor and decided that schools would be graded. And so after a period of preparation and field testing the tests, the students and the schools would be graded. And graded, I mean like this, an A, a B, a C,
sure.
Depending on how well they performed. And so what's happened then from there, we went to the Common Core curriculum, and that was that all was developed during the Obama administration, and it became a national curriculum called Common Core. And with that, the whole nation became focused on testing. And I really think what has happened in our schools is that teachers their decision-making and their ability to be creative and meet individual student needs have really gone by the wayside, because they are required to teach these Common Core standards, but they are required to teach them to a specific test, that is given in the spring every year. And, of course, we've always had standardized testing in schools, but we use that testing to base our instruction for our students. And now it's being used to grade schools, or what I say, to degrade schools. Because what's happened now is public education is being degraded. It's all we hear is about the negative part, and we don't hear about the good things that are happening in schools. So teachers are struggling.
Yes.
Because,
the schools that have not gotten the good ratings, what happens to those schools? Are they losing funding, or kids making choices to leave? Or is that where charter schools come into play? What you're talking about, Common Core, that was an offshoot also of No Child Left Behind, I believe, wasn't it?
That's correct. Okay. No Child Left Behind did come before Common Core. So,
right.
Yes, that was an offshoot of No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, so
And what's happened is that, students learn in different ways on different days, different learning styles, and teachers are experts at matching students' learning styles to how they deliver the curriculum. And now every teacher is expected to, teach in a cookie-cutter fashion
Yep.
to all students in the same way on the same day. And it really got so bad, that I even decided to retire early because teachers were, I was being expected to evaluate teachers on, how they were performing and how they were being evaluated on our evaluation system. And, it didn't sit well with me ethically or morally because mm-hmm. we were not doing what was best for students.
So when schools focus on testing the way they're doing, what happens to relationships, Susan? I think there must be some connection there. When you focus on an inanimate thing like a test as being the primary reason why you're teaching, or the goal of the teaching is to do well on the test, what happens to relationships, either relationships with teachers with each other, relationships with teachers to children, children to teachers, parents? How does that get all affected by that?
Well, relationships are not at the top of the list, and they should be.
Mm-hmm.
I have always fought for building relationships, and that's been one of my successes is to especially face-to-face conversational relationships. And with the testing focus in the classroom, of course, there is no conversation that takes place, a learning conversation or relationships between teachers and students. Between the teachers and the parents, and relationships do go by the wayside.
Yeah,
and it's very unfortunate because, relationships are what we're all about.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to work together as a community, a school community,
mm-hmm.
The school should be the center of the community, and those relationships should be built. So with the testing focus, there is not time for that relationship building. Mm-hmm.
So if with a focus on testing the way it is, I'm just thinking out loud here, is that it seems then that students probably, there are a lot of kids who learn because they love to learn. And they want the information. They want to keep the information. They see it practical and useful in their lives, or they get excited about learning new things because they're going on to higher education. But I'm thinking if kids are learning or they're getting the message that they're only learning for the test, what does that do to their desire to have a love of learning?
It kills the joy of learning.
Okay.
And, and that's one of my passions is to bring back the joy of learning
mm-hmm.
to the classroom and to bring back the decision-making to the teachers and to have actual parents and communities come together in their neighborhoods and take back public education. Take it back so that the parents have say in the decisions that are made. Right now, it's politicians and big business that mm-hmm. are making all the decisions and driving the focus of education. And I really believe that this can be changed by working with neighborhoods and communities together to make that happen. And I think that relationships are the most important. And if we lose that, what do we lose? We lose our ability to work together as a community. We lose the ability for students to be prepared for the for the world of work, where businesses, you know, want people who are able to work together in teams and, you know, relationships from student to student so that they learn how to, you know, to solve problems together. And
so what about the idea that, I mean, if you're on a school board members are always looking at funding. They have to be able to do things within budgetary constraints and things like that. So there's always this this discussion and this argument as to whether or not schools are a business. Should they be treated as a business, or are they something different from that? What's your take on that?
Well, schools have become a big business, unfortunately. When I was a principal, yes, we looked at the business side of education as the business side of education. Of course, there were budgets and there were things that had to be attended to. But there is the human side. And the most important part of education is building relationships and building that human side. And so, you know, I feel that it's not always the school boards with the decisions on money. Money comes from the federal government and from the states. And right now, as we've seen across the country with teacher walkouts and all of the things that have been happening recently in education, is that states are grossly underfunding local districts. And so school boards have also stepped up and tried to respond to the state legislators and say, you know, let's not take this public money and put it into privatization of schools. I mean, a charter school is fine if it's has the same standards as a public school, but private for-profit charter schools are not held to the same standards as public schools. So, for example, teachers can be paid less. Teachers do not have to be certified in the areas that they teach. And so the students are not necessarily getting the same quality education as they would in a public school with a certified teacher if that teacher was allowed to make the decision.
Well, and that's an interesting perspective there. We're going to be coming up here on a break on a moment. So what's your take, not to make this political, what's your take on the education secretary, Betsy DeVos? Do you think she's good for public education, or do you think she's not good for it?
Overwhelmingly, no.
No,
not good
okay.
for it.
Okay.
Okay.
Why do you say that?
I say that because, well, a perfect example is a 60 Minutes interview that was she was on about a month or 6 weeks ago. And she was asked a question about, you know, her lower performing schools in the state where she resides or had has resided before going to Washington. And she really said with no uncertain terms, you know, I try not to ever go into those.
I know. I was hoping you would say this because I know that's the quote that she said. I mean, that would, to me, that's a horrific thing to have to say as the education secretary of the United States. But so it gives you some perspective, though, on the way she thinks about some of the things. So obviously you're saying she's not a good influence on public education because she's leaning toward more privatization than supporting the public schools in a way. Susan, we're going to take a break here. So before we do that, tell us a little bit about your website. If people go to SusanAColton.com, what will they find if they go there?
They will find some background about myself, some topics that I explore as a facilitator, a trainer and a speaker for business and education groups. Also, they'll, you know, see some topics, some major topics that that I talk about. One of those that you mentioned was putting students at the top of the organizational chart.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and also I'm adding to that as we speak, a Twitter feed and my Facebook blog and all of those kinds of things.
It sounds like you're on top of all the ways to get the information out, which is a good thing. Folks, we're talking to Susan Colton, and she's written a book called Principles Passion. Now, this book is really fascinating, and it's interesting. It's an easy read, but it's loaded with lots of information that you can use and understand what's going on in public education. And her subtitle is A Quest for Quality Public Education. Well, we're going to take a break. You know, we do this. We'll take a break. We'll be back with her. I have a lot of things to talk to her about yet tonight. You're listening to Straight Talk here on The Voice, 830 AM WEU. And, you know, of course, if you just tuned in, one of the things you can do is go to our website at WEEU.com. Just scroll down the homepage so you get the section called Straight Talk. You'll be able to listen to this entire interview again and again, because you're going to want to do that. There's plenty of information here, and sometimes you can't catch it all the first time through. So we're going to take a break. Stay with us. A lot more to come. You're listening to Straight Talk. I'll be right back.
Laughed at Christopher Columbus when he said the world was round.
They all laughed when Edison recorded sound.
They all laughed at Wilbur and his brother when they said man could fly.
They told Marconi wireless was a phony. It's the same old cry.
They laughed at me, one and you, said I was reaching for the moon.
But oh, you came through. Change their tune.
They all said we'd never could be happy.
They laughed at us and how.
Ho, 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 who's got the last laugh now?
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Straight Talk. Welcome on in if you're just joining us here on The Voice, 8:30 a.m. WEEU, and of course online, WEEU.com. We're talking about education tonight. Our special guest is an authority, an expert in education. She spent 30 years in education, 20-some of those years as being a principal in the sixth largest school district in Florida. That's Broward County Public School System. So she has a lot of experience, a lot of information, and she's trying to get her message across to all of us about how schools have changed, that maybe we're focusing too much on testing and losing our sense of connection with our students, our teachers, and the community in some sense. And the name of the book is called Principal's Passion, and our guest is Susan Colton. Her website is her name, Susan A. Colton, that's Colton.com. So, Susan, before we get a chance to talk about ways the community can work together to make schools better. You know, one of the big issues today is, and your state has experienced this, many states have actually experienced this, and that is safety in schools and the controversy surrounding that stuff. What do you think when you're hearing these shootings in schools done by, you know, former students or students? What can we do about that? And do you have any take on what you think about safety?
Oh, well, Nick, I will tell you that hit really close to home for me, because my elementary school was a feeder school into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which experienced that horrific Valentine's Day shooting. Wow. And actually, one of my prior students, who started in kindergarten at my school, was a senior about to graduate, and he was one of the victims.
Wow.
And so, you know, knowing the family, he also had a brother. So knowing the entire family and knowing what they're going through. And then, of course, my school community that was definitely affected by that. You know, one of the things I'm so proud of is the students speaking up. And I think that this gives me hope for the future, because I know we try to hang on to those things that students need in their lives at school beyond academics and testing. Mm-hmm. And that's teaching the total child, you know, the emotional, the social, as well as the intellectual. So what we need to do is we need to really think about, you know, what we're doing in schools. And, you know, we need to step back and say, should we be spending more time as we used to in classrooms on building relationships and having that social emotional connection for students, so that so that we know our students and that we're able to recognize if there is something that's going to happen or something that's wrong or not quite right, you know, in a student's life. And schools, I know, try to spend as much time as they can with those issues. But I think, you know, the big controversial debate, of course, is banning guns. The threat of our Second Amendment. I certainly believe that as a country, we need to come together and as individual communities and have conversations about this. And I think that with all of this happening across the country recently is that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And we need to put those ideas out on the table. I believe, of course, in our Constitution, and I believe in the First Amendment of free speech and the Second Amendment the right to bear arms. But we need to look at what is appropriate for or the norm for our country or our society. And we really need to have those conversations, and whether it's done, you know, on a national basis or on state basis or on an individual community basis, is we really, really need to continue those conversations.
I think what you said earlier, that the key of all of this stuff is relationships and connection with people, because the more alienated kids feel, either because of bullying, face-to-face bullying or social media bullying, things like that, the more alienated kids become. They feel like they're left out. They're not getting the attention, perhaps healthy attention, that they need. They have a tendency then to want to lash out at those who haven't given them what they basically need. Now, I'm not exonerating or excusing kids for acting out like that, but we do need to understand it. Kids, just like adults, need some sense of connection to a community in some form, and I think that would go a long way. Now, Susan, before I let you go on to another topic here, what's your take on arming teachers or arming staff or at all? Do you have any thoughts about that, since that's another big controversy today?
I don't believe in arming teachers. I think that's adding just one more thing to a teacher's already overloaded plate of requirements and accountabilities. I believe that if we want to hire, retired or ex-military or law enforcement personnel to carry guns on school campuses, that's fine. But teachers are already overloaded and overwhelmed, and there are so many questions that come up with teachers carrying guns and how that could be, play out with students and accidents and additional safety concerns at schools. So my take on that is no, not arming teachers. We could provide additional armed personnel, but not the teachers themselves.
Teacher. Yeah.
Exactly.
So a big part of what you write about is connecting ideas to getting the community to be involved in public education. So can you share a few ideas with us of how you think things could be made better by connecting the communities with their schools?
Well, I think we need to work with our teachers and giving them more authority on making decisions. That, of course, has to come through the state governments and our legislators and our school boards. We need to involve parents in their schools, and I know it's difficult because parents work more than one job these days, and they cannot find the time always to come to the school. But we need to look at the technology that we have available, how to connect parents and the communities with their schools. We need to market our schools better. We need to invite our communities, our parents. We need to invite our local businesses in to be a part of our schools and set up partnerships. We need to work with our local governments. We need to, get our local government officials involved and bring back, you know, one of the things that we're having conversations about now is bring back civics education.
Right.
Which, of course, is what goes back to the original idea of public education, you know, is just educating everyone for the common good of all people. Mm-hmm. So having the local governments involved, bringing them in, giving the students some responsibility, some community service activities, some involvement with their parents. At my school, before I retired, we decided to have a block party. And we had the city lend our stage, their portable stage, and our parents. We had probably 600 parents come out that evening, and the students performed on the stage. And we had food booths and all kinds of things. But we need to really think about, I think about the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and when local businesses and companies and parents in the community are more aware of the children and what they're doing, and they relate to each other about, of course, if I ever did something on my way home from school, I would, it would be, my parents would know by the time I got home.
Exactly,
because all the local businesses or the community members would be involved. We need to get back to that sense of community, and I really think that public schools can be the center of that. But we do have to work together, and we do have to bring in our legislators and our decision makers and just express, that we really, as our neighborhoods, want to take back public schools. We want to make the decisions. We want to have a say in how our children learn, and especially as it relates to our individual communities as well as globally.
So more local control makes a lot of sense in your mind, because the school should reflect the community and the community should reflect the school. They both should be in harmony with each other. If you can give me maybe a minute or two, because we're going to be running out of time here, what's your take on teacher training or administrator training? Is it up to snuff? Are teachers being trained for the contemporary world, and are administrators being trained? Do they have the skills for the way public education is today? I mean, if you can give me a minute and a half on that or so, that would be great.
Well, what I see happening is that monies for teacher training and administrative training are being reduced as school districts are being underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that that's one of the dangers is occurring right now. Public school teachers go through a lot of training, but the training needs to be meaningful, and it needs to be authentic to their needs. It needs to bring in technology, but it also the training needs to be about how do we engage these 21st century students that are so media oriented and, technically oriented with their phones and their forms of communication. But, how do we relate to them?
And that's probably one of the biggest issues that, public education will face. Susan, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being such a special guest on the show tonight. And I wish you the best with the work that you're doing and continuing to help communities, relate to their schools and schools relate to their communities. Please stay on the line. I'll be right back with you. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, folks, Susan Colton, you got to get a copy of the book if you're interested in education. You know that I'm interested in it. We work with kids every week here on WEEU, and the name of the book is called Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. Go to her website, which is her name, SusanAColton.com. Think about the things we've talked about tonight, folks. Come back and visit with me the next time here on WEEU, and as always, I'll see you on the radio.
For someone to hold when I'm blue, when I'm lonely, she comes through. She's the only one who can. My baby Gran is all I need. In my time, I've wandered everywhere around.